What drives a mother to give her son the same rifle his brother used for suicide as a Christmas gift? This isn't fiction. It's the true story of Bobby's parents, respectable churchgoers who seemed utterly normal. 8 months after their older son Stuart shot himself, they wrapped that .22 rifle and placed it under the tree for Bobby. When confronted, they appeared genuinely confused about the problem. Despite Bobby's depression and declining grades, they hadn't sought help, believing he'd get over it. Evil doesn't always announce itself with dramatic cruelty. More often, it wears the mask of normalcy, hiding behind church attendance and community respectability while destroying lives through calculated indifference. Understanding this hidden face of evil and why seemingly ordinary people commit extraordinary harm reveals uncomfortable truths about human nature that we can no longer afford to ignore. Evil people share a striking pattern. They sacrifice others to preserve their self-image. Bobby's parents needed to see themselves as good parents more than they needed to protect their son. Roger's parents presented themselves as community pillars while systematically crushing their son's spirit. When Roger received an invitation to a prestigious New York conference, they prevented him from attending because his room was messy. When confronted, they cited their professional success as proof of mental health and suggested Roger had a genetic defect. 3 weeks later, they sent Roger to military school despite professional advice against it, then claimed they'd followed that advice. At the core lies pathological narcissism, self-absorption so extreme that others exist merely as props. These individuals cannot accept criticism or acknowledge imperfection. Instead, they project all inadequacy onto others, creating elaborate webs of lies to maintain their facade. What makes this truly disturbing is how ordinary it appears from outside. How do intelligent people maintain such elaborate self-deception? Charlene's case provides chilling insight. Despite 400 therapy sessions over 3 years, she made zero progress because she refused to surrender control. Though desperately needing maternal nurturing, she insisted on sexual attention instead. Healing required temporary regression, becoming vulnerable like a child again, but she couldn't allow it. Her unconscious revealed the truth through a dream. She'd built an elaborate war machine on another planet, planning to seduce, then destroy a man who entered her laboratory. When he attacked her machine instead, she frantically tried activating defenses before waking in agitation. The therapist suggested the machine represented her neurosis, large, complicated, built over years, designed for warfare but constantly failing. Charlene erupted. "No, it's not my neurosis." She defended her beautiful creation with its intricate design. Her willfulness revealed itself as psychological autism, the utter failure to submit to reality. She lived entirely in a world of her own making, admitting she created chaos because it's fun and gives me a sense of power, showing no concern for the impact on others. Individual evil is disturbing, but group evil reaches catastrophic proportions. On March 16, 1968, Task Force Barker entered My Lai, Vietnam, finding only unarmed women, children, and elderly, not a single combatant. They killed between 500 and 600 people. How can 500 men, most not individually evil, participate in something so monstrous? Groups behave like individuals, but at more primitive levels. They're psychologically less than the sum of their parts. Specialization fragments moral responsibility. Pentagon officials producing napalm deflected concerns to policymakers, who deflected to the White House, until individual conscience vanished entirely. Under chronic stress, humans regress to primitive functioning. Task Force Barker lived far from home in uncomfortable conditions, facing unpredictable danger. They experienced psychic numbing, repeated exposure to horror, dulling emotional sensitivity. This self-anesthesia isn't selective. Becoming insensitive to suffering makes one more likely to inflict it. Military training deliberately fosters psychological dependency on leaders, mandating obedience over independent thought. Task Force Barker wasn't random Americans, but specialized killers created for one purpose: search and destroy. Career soldiers give the military its continuity. In peacetime, they're dismissed as necessary evils. In wartime, they become heroes. This shift creates powerful incentives. War brings promotions, medals, and significance. America's technological infatuation distanced conscience. Napalm burned bodies, planes killed civilians, not we ourselves. Yet, despite our might, we were losing Vietnam, an unthinkable humiliation that provoked vicious retaliation. But the military didn't enter Vietnam alone. It was sent by the government acting for the American people. We fought because we believed communism was monolithic evil, requiring opposition everywhere by any means. By the mid-1960s, abundant evidence contradicted this view. Yugoslavia and Albania operated independently of the USSR. China and the USSR were potential enemies. Vietnam's motivation was nationalism, not expansion. Yet precisely when this understanding emerged, we escalated involvement through laziness and narcissism. Astonishingly, 95% of American troops knew virtually nothing about Vietnamese history or culture. We were too lazy to learn and too narcissistic to question our assumed rightness. My lie wasn't an inexplicable accident, but an inevitable outcome in war's evil context. Unlike animals driven by instinct, humans show extraordinary variability in killing. Some embrace hunting, others are repulsed, many remain indifferent. This lack of hardwired instincts defines humanity. Evil emerges as the price of unprecedented free will. We cannot avoid killing to survive, but we choose how, when, and what we kill. These moral complexities create paradoxes. Vegetarians spare animals but destroy plants. Pacifists support abortion while opposing war. Pro-lifers champion capital punishment while opposing euthanasia. Narcissism and in-group bias drive unnecessary killing. We're more likely to kill what differs from us. War represents uniquely human mass killing. No other species systematically destroys its own kind. National narcissism preserves our obsolete nation-state system despite global communication making borders increasingly irrelevant. Evil exhibits dreary monotony. While saints show unique personalities and creative approaches, evil people display remarkably similar characteristics, all trapped in repetitive patterns of destruction. As we've tamed external threats through science, proportional internal dangers have emerged. Major threats now stem from human nature itself. Our carelessness with nuclear weapons and environmental destruction, our tribal hostilities, our institutional selfishness. Unless we examine our own evil with the same rigor we've applied to the external world, we're lost. Science detached from religious insights leads to the lunacy of the arms race. Religion unsubmitted to scientific scrutiny produces the lunacy of Jonestown. Neither approach alone suffices. In our age of the institution, responsibility becomes dangerously diffused, with no individual feeling fully accountable. Unless we subject capitalism to higher values, making businesses accountable not just to shareholders, but to humanity, we're doomed. Though groups have collective identity, we can only influence them by influencing individuals. History can turn on one person's change of heart. Children must learn that laziness and narcissism root all human evil. Our survival depends on developing the clarity to see evil, the courage to name it, and the wisdom to confront it without becoming it ourselves.